Hello and welcome to today's Hometown Alaska. We have a special guest today, Mr. Fred Newman, the sound effects guy for our Prairie Home Companion. Welcome, Fred. And we also have in studio, I think, Bruce McKinnon, who is with
Bruce
Cyrano's.
Kelly.
Yeah. Who's with Cyrano's Theater. And this is a part of their fundraiser, I guess. So he'll tell us about that in a sec. But in the meantime, I want to let you know that it was not easy getting our guest here. It was rather difficult, in fact, because as a public radio station, we don't have a lot of money. So instead of flying him up first class, we brought him up in this rickety Cessna. Oh, man. And, of course, we ran into turbulence, which was rather frightening.
Boom, boom, please and fasten your seat.
Before long, we had to ditch in the Gassano Channel outside of Juneau. So from there, we made our way to shore swimming bravely through the icebergs. And with our survival equipment, which was chainsaws and machetes, we hacked our way north to Valdez, which had been buried, unfortunately, in the recent snowstorm. But we figured that if we dug, we would find it, which we did, and uncovered the grateful citizens who gave us a team of dogs with which we mushed north to Anchorage, arriving here in the nick of time, 5 minutes before we were to begin our broadcast today. So, Fred, I want to thank you for taking all that energy and effort to get here. That was not easy.
No, it was arduous, but it's Alaska's worth it.
Yep, that's what I thought.
Still out of breath.
Yep. Well, just gather your breath now, and we'll invite our listeners, if they want to call in and request maybe a sound effect or talk to you about your work with Prairie Home Companion, stuff like that. I'll give them the numbers now.
Great.
That would be in Anchorage, 550-8433. Toll free statewide, it's going to be 888-353-5752. And you could also send us an email. That's hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we're open for business now, and we'll start off with a question here, Fred, which is, what brings you here besides the rickety Cessna?
The best excuse of all, I've been invited up here to do a fundraiser for Cyrano's Theater. And it's 20th anniversary, it's legendary in the field of theater. Sandy Harper and Jerry Harper started this 20 years ago. And I think they've done, 120 productions? Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
This is Bruce Kelly, who is the chairman. He's the president of the board. And he got stuck promoting the show with me. Mm-hmm. But he's been very gracious. And I'm doing a show on Friday night at 7 o'clock at the Alaska Museum Auditorium. Mm-hmm. And it'll be about what is my favorite subject, growing up weird. Okay. And when we came here this summer, we noticed we had the best audience I think we've ever had for Prairie Home Companion. Mm-hmm. And it was just this wonderful audience that I describe it like fishing, that we throw out lures out there, wind these things back in. They hit every lure we threw out. And we stayed longer than we should have stayed. I think we wore out the audience, but they were very expressive, very warm, and they had a lovely weirdness about them. And all the people. And I was this weird kid making sound effects in rural, small-town Georgia, and I felt this sort of kinship. So I was very excited that Sandy invited me up here to do a show for a great cause.
So what is your show? What would that be? I'm
not sure. I have to see the whites of their eyes before I decide. But I actually do a lot of work with kids. I do a public television show called Between the Lions. So I've got a lock on the 6 and under set. I do a Sesame Street and stuff like that. But I do college campuses, then I do Prairie Home. So you've got this range, and depending on what the mix of the audience is. Mm-hmm. But I will talk about, I'll do some stories about growing up and talk about the voice and sounds and do a lot of, sounds along the way. So I can't resist
If you back that car out now, that'd be fine.
Thank you. Oh, it's stuck.
Well, we got the dogs. I guess we can use the dogs. the Holyoke.
We got it out.
That's good. Okay, well, that's a relief. let's move along here to the thing that is probably uppermost on people's minds.
What's that?
Which is this all you do? Is this what you make a living?
What's your real job? Yeah. You know, how do I describe it? I went to Harvard Business School, me and Mitt Romney mm-hmm. and I. I went to Harvard Business School, thought I was going to be a legitimate member of society, and worked at Newsweek for a couple of years, doing a little stand-up. In clubs, I realized the sounds really broke through, and these are sounds that I had heard as a kid, old storytellers down in Georgia. When I say old, mm-hmm. these are old-timers, most of them black, but not all of them. And I decided to write a book about it. It was an old folk art that had been passed on, and no one had done how do you... And so I did this book, Mouth Sounds, years ago. I was asked to go... I got an invitation for the David Letterman show to go over, and I was working at Newsweek, walked across to NBC, and I told my boss I was going to the John. Went across, auditioned for the show. He said, come on the show. And I went back, to my boss, and I resigned. And that was the last legitimate job I've had.
You were a reporter or what? For Newsweek?
I was in New Ventures. I mean, I was like, you know, this semi-hot shot, not really a sort of a warm shot coming out of Harvard mm-hmm. Business School, and I was working in New Ventures, and Newsweek was just starting some new magazines. Mm-hmm. Inside Sports was one of the magazines they helped start. But at that time, this is, 30 years mm-hmm. ago. I resigned from Newsweek, and my boss said, what happened in the John? You know, that, and Letterman was the first show that I went on. Remember Tomorrow's Show with Tom Snyder? He sat there and smoked cigarettes mm-hmm. in front of you, you know. That was the second show. And then I did this whirlwind tour, book tour, where they used to do book tours a long time ago when authors had status. And mm-hmm. and as a book, you do a book like Mouth Sounds. There's no status in that, but author, you know, it's like, you know. And I haven't, one of the shows I did was a teenage talk show called Live Wire, first show on Nickelodeon. And I did a fly impression that I got up and flew off the set and landed on the rear wall. I didn't know that you don't want to outrun the cameras on television. I'm just thinking this will be a funny bit. And they invited me back to host that show. And that was the first job. And I've followed radio, and radio especially, because it was so much like what I grew up with, the storytellers. Since then, and so I've gone from just honking and doing water drips, and I can tell you more about the storytelling part of it, over into sound design, and now music. I even have I never thought I'd be saying this, but I have a symphony coming out in San Francisco for the Marin Symphony, debuting on May 6th.
Okay, is this a symphony you wrote, or is this a symphony?
I co-wrote with Rob Capello.
Oh, that's interesting. And who's Rob Capello?
Rob Capello is really well-known composer. He does a lot of What Makes It Great. He's got several books out. He does NPR. He does a lot of classical work, a very straight-on classical guy, but he wanted to expand it into sound and involve the sort of prehistory of the bridge and the Golden Gate, which was Golden Passage. Mm-hmm. So I came in there's actually an instrument. I have it right here. This is it looks like a tinker toy with two rubber bands on it. These are from Staples. Mm-hmm. They're larger size rubber bands with a 3x5 card on it. And I've got a string. And I've got a fishing swivel, which is key, because I'm going to whirl this over my head.
Okay. This is what they did in the old days down south, I guess.
I never saw one of these, but it was invented for Palabolas, a dance group, to do to be a locust sound. Mm-hmm. But I wanted it tunable, and that's what it sounds like. But then I could tune it to be like bagpipes, so I've got a drone going. And I found, I can sing against this. And I started with, I actually did this with the tour with Prairie Home. Let's see. It's a lazy afternoon, and the beetle bugs are zooming, and the tulip trees are blooming. And there's not another human in view but us two. A fat pink cloud hangs over the hill, unfolding like a rose. If you sit real still, and hold my hand. You can hear the grass as it grows. So you can sing against it. And we're going to start out this whole symphony with this. This will be tuned to the frequency of the bridge. And we'll do this frequency. So I won't be doing this. The percussionist will. And so it's all little squiggles of notes on papers with a lot of sound effects and the history of the bridge.
And the bridge is the Golden Gate. Which
the Golden Gate.
The reason that you're going to do the symphony, I guess. Is
yeah.
That's really...
You know what? I'm a sound nerd. And the question I get, because I do, you know, these, you know, whether it's dogs or cats or, you know, condors, they say, oh, how do you make those sounds? It's not about making the sound. It's about getting the sound in. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about listening. And one of the reasons I've been drawn to public television and public radio is because that's where the best storytelling is.
The visuals are so boring that there's...
Well, they don't dominate. Yep. And that's what happens with the other visual media is that they dominate and you're not even aware of the sound. Well, here you are. And, you know, it's a story. You know, you're listening to the stories. I said this earlier. I was talking to some people today. I was in Seattle on a book tour for this book, Mouth Sounds, wherever quality books are sold. That I was on a book tour. And I got a call from the local, give us 20 minutes, we'll give you the world, the local news station. And the guy said, I would like to do an interview with you. And I said, why would you want to do that? He said, because, we're losing listenership. We're listening big time. The public radio station in Seattle is dominating the market. And we're losing. And we interviewed people, and people said they don't want data. Mm-hmm. We're giving them data. We're giving them bits of information. They got data on their phone. They got data coming in all over the place. What they want is stories. Yep. And so we ended up, so he said, I have to put six sound effects in every story I do. So if I'm going to City Hall, they want to hear the sound of loafers on marble. Mm-hmm. And you start out with, you know, with an echo, which I can't do. And then I'm at City Hall, and we were talking to the mayor about the new. So you put them in a place, you lay it out like a story, and they were doing it chasing public radio because of the storytelling. That's why I think it's doing so well. And mm-hmm. I'm back where I used to be at the foot of storytellers in Georgia. I'm at the foot of Garrison Keillor doing these things, and so I feel like I've come home in lots of ways.
Well, that's interesting when you say that. At least you think about. The first things that you're aware of as a person, I think, are the sounds that you hear coming through your mother's belly, which is the and your mother's heartbeat is the thing that's so fundamental because it starts when you're very young.
You know, if you look on any metronome, the default metronome mm-hmm. is 120. If you buy any computer program, when a software program that does sequencing and you do music with it, the default metronome is 120. The average heartbeat is 60. Is 120. I'm not quite doing 120, but that. Mm-hmm. So it's so into it. Do you know that people in? Now see if you probably guess this.
Okay.
If you ask an audience to hum a note, mm-hmm. in America they'll hum a B. It's
B flat.
They'll hum a B flat. Mm-hmm. And in do you know why that would be?
I don't know, but I read some of the B flat is everybody's favorite note. I don't know why that is.
Well, a B flat. No one's ever said. They guessed B flat, so you're pretty good on that. That in Europe they hum, I think it's A flat. And the reason for that
is the difference in pitch that we ascribe to the key of the notes. It's like A is a different pitch in Europe than it is here. So that's the same B flat, same frequency. Is my guess.
Although, you know, if I were a teacher, I'd go, Johnny, that's very good.
Yes,
that's very good. But that's not actually the answer.
Oh, damn.
The answer is we have 60 cycle current. They have 50 cycle current. It's a multiple of 60. And over there, it's a multiple of 50. And we have the sound right over our head right uh-huh. now. We have fluorescent lights.
Yep.
There's a 60 cycle. Every audio guy lives in fear of 60 cycle hum. Yep. That's what we have around us, whether it's you're by a vending machine or any kind of motor, all those that 60. The only time you don't have it, and one of the reasons it feels so good to get in a car mm-hmm. is that you have silence. They have DC current. Oh. There's no 60 cycle hum around you. But people have that hum as part of our nature. We the subliminally we pick up these sounds, and when in fact I say the more I've learned about it is that we tribalize by sounds. If I want to know who you are, let me see your iPhone. Let me see your iPad. Let me see your list of songs. That will tell me more about who you are. Where are you on the radio dial? Mm-hmm. Are you urban? Are you NPR? Are you country? There varies this classic country and this modern country. You know that where you are tells about your demographics, tells about where you were raised, what your parents were like, and it's all off sound. And not any other fashions. You can't tell by fashion. You can't tell any other way. Genes mean nothing, but sound does. And so we and accents. I mean, where are you from? I get where are you from because they hear a little bit of Southern in there. Yep. And it's there. That's the way we judge. 90% of our communication, real emotional communication, happens through our voice, and ears. And it's phenomenal. We don't study it. There's no courses in school. It should be. We study writing. We don't ever think about a voice. In fact, when you hear your voice, you go, "Oh, I don't sound like that. Oh, turn that thing off." No, that's what you sound like.
Well, speaking of voices, let me just give out the numbers again, so people can call us. What you call? If you would like to call in and speak with our guest, Fred Newman, the sound effects guy, which I guess is the where your job description is written, is sound effects guy.
I'll buy that. Yeah.
Okay. You want to call 550-8433 in Anchorage. 1-888-353-5752 statewide. That's toll free. And you could also send us an email. That would be hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now that I have the floor here for a second, I'd like to ask another question.
Did I talk too long?
No. It's fine. The more you want to talk, that's good. But let's. I want to ask you about Southern traditions. You mentioned earlier going back to when you were a kid and the storytellers would be ornamenting their stories with sounds. Could you embroider that a little bit for us?
Yeah. Let me think. The guys that told stories, and the picture, this is, was aware of this in probably 61, 62. I was all of 8 years old. And there was a whitewashed country store, grocery store, forerunner of 7-Eleven. But it was, it's called Jack Fling's Cash and Carry Grow, and it was grow because they didn't have enough room between the Coca-Cola red lozenges on either side. That's the sign. And the screen door, and it was on Country Club Road, but hard by a road called Red Line Alley, which was former slave cabins turned servants' quarters, turned just a black street on the white side of town. If it's Country Club Road, you know it's a white side of town in Georgia. And this is about 60, 70 miles south of Atlanta, almost on the Alabama border. And there inside is an assemblage of characters, lawyer Weldon in a seersucker suit, and there's Jack Fling himself, who's this big guy with a looks like a nose like a hood ornament. I mean, a big guy, big barrel of a guy. Fred, I'm gonna tell you a story, and yeah, everybody, and he would take a loaf of Merita bread, and he would fluff it up and put it behind his head and rear back in the chair against the shelf, and he would start. He would tell a story. He would unwind a story. And across is like Fred the Yard Man, and there's a moment where a sidebar here. The coolest guy in the world to me when I was 6 years old was a guy who swallowed in that group there, who swallowed lit cigars for a living. Now, I mean, it was totally impressive. A city slicker would come driving out of Atlanta, come by and stop for a Coca-Cola, and there's a fan that pushed hot air around and around. He would. This guy, you gonna see me swallow a lit cigar? He said, yeah. Has he paid me $1? I said, yeah, I'll pay you $1. And he would swallow a lit cigar, and he would actually drink a Coca-Cola after it, and smoke would come out his nose. Mm-hmm. Cool. I went home to my Presbyterian deacon dad at the table that night. And that was the storytelling, and that was, well, what'd you do today, son? And that was how you learned to tell a story there. We all had dinner every night, and you told what happened the other day. And he would correct you if you didn't tell the story right. Who were you talking to? The teacher said that. So he's telling you how to tell a story. So we're all, and I said, Dad, I know what I want to be. He said, what? I said, I want to swallow lit cigars for a living. That's what I want to do. And then he looked, my dad looked at my mom, and he kind of nodded and said, that's good, son. Aim high. Mm-hmm. And darned if it isn't what I'm doing right now. Yeah, I'm so close to doing that. Is that where you were going with it right there?
No, that isn't. But I think it was sort of illustrative of a certain thing, which is you're not done telling that story. And I interrupted you. And that was a thing which I didn't realize I was doing at the time. But the pause was so long that I think I was out of sync with the way I usually listen to stories. And I assumed it was time for me to jump in. But
You know what? I'm sorry I gave you that head fake. I went back to Georgia where there was a little more time.
Yep.
A little more time. Yeah, and they would tell stories where they would crank cars, you know, got in my car right there. And the story that Jack Fling would have told mm-hmm. would have been about Knuckles the cat. And that was the meanest cat. That was it was a squint-eyed yellow cat. Oh, but that's the size of a footstool. Being able to walk around with that big old Knuckles, walked on its knuckle, couldn't even pull in its little fangs on its fingernails. It walk around like this, and the dog, you look at the dog. They go off, you know. He look up at the birds, and go off, and he told stories like that. And you know, and everybody, Lawyer Weld, white, black, everybody was galvanized. They had to, and people told stories like that. And there was one guy who was particularly good. His name was Snipes. I never knew his last name. Snipes worked with am I going on too long with this story?
This is fine.
Okay. Interrupt me.
I'm galvanized.
Oh, you're galvanized. Yeah. All right, so I'm sitting I'm sitting in a pile of sand. It's a hot afternoon, Chattahoochee Valley. Every afternoon about 4 o'clock, weather comes up, and it's like the inside of someone's mouth. It gets real hot on the summer day, and you're sitting under a pile of sand because the sand is still cool. And it rained in the afternoon, rained every afternoon, and then there was water dripping off the side of this nail shed into a nail bucket. And I was dead even with it. I could see that it's like a piece of glass on the top of this nail bucket, and the water's going bloop, bloop, bloop. And Snipes turned to me and said, "Fred, did you ever looked at a water drop? Ever watched it go down?" I said, "No, I hadn't." I said, "Look at that. Watch it." And he went, bloop. And he said, "It looks like a bullet. Doesn't it? It's not soft. It'll go down and it blows a hole in the water. Look at it." And I would see it go bloop, and it blew a crater in the water. Like you could imagine slow motion. It blew a crater in the water. And then it would start pushing out like a balloon, and lips on the top of that crater would start closing in, and the water would go bloop. It would go up a little up. He said, "You can make that sound." I said, "No." He said, "Yeah." And he did. "How you do that?" He said, "What you do, imagine you have water in your mouth. You have water in your mouth right here. You've got water in your mouth. And you're going to push that water. Breathe through your nose and push the water out. And you take your finger. I take my fingertip and tap on my cheek. And you push the water out. My tongue is coming right through. And I didn't get it at first, but I went home and worked at it for about 2 or 3 days, and I got that water drip. But when you see out of this, like, National Geographic face, it's all just like, it looks like a relief map. Oh, whiskers, you know, white whiskers sticking out, and that beautiful, delicate, which is a perfect sound. And nothing's vibrating. It's just the air itself. It's like a whistle. And you can do that. When I saw that, I went, "Oh, that's magic. That's magic." And I started collecting sounds from there. And that was back in Jack Fling's store, and he's cranking cars, and, you know, and whip up inside the wall, and that thing hit the thing, like, oh, man. And so he's telling those stories, and I just did those naturally, and kids do. And that was the way stories were told. All those Uncle Rima stories were told and written by Joel Chandler Harris. He was writing in the accent of Middle Georgia, former black slave, 1886, and he got the voice of it. And I'm listening to the same people with a very similar accent tell those stories, all the Brer Rabbit and Brer Fox and all that. So it was a pretty magical time to grow up just as television is coming in and just as radio is going out, and that oral tradition was still hanging on for another about 10 years.
Well, that's one of the things I've always been interested in, is the way the oral tradition has been challenged, I would say, but not defeated by the modern media. It's still there. In fact, in some ways, it's exploited the modern media, and as you have, to come back in some ways.
Well, you know, because it requires less bandwidth, it's homesteaded all the modern media. I mean, we didn't start with film. We started with sound and as storytellers. Then film took over because we got modern film first, but then silence had to catch up with it. Once we got to internet, we had the bandwidth for music. And what happened with MP3s and iPods, we could see what was going to happen with television. And because we had that bandwidth there to do it. And what I found, too, in working in sound reinforcement for both sound and television and radio, is that all the information's on the screen, and beautifully so, which is overwhelming to a visual nature. But all the emotional content is in the soundtrack, and that's where you manipulate it. So many times when in things that where you're adding pitbull growls into the sound of an earth moving machine, so you feel viscerally this thing tearing at the earth in a way you don't know it. You wouldn't. It's totally subliminal, but we can do that with sound design. That's what I work on now. So much of that. And I think what's happening with the definition of what humans were was when we came along, it was they're toolmakers. Humans are toolmakers. Animals aren't. That's what makes us human. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not. We now know we're not that by a long shot. Crows use branches. Ants cultivate little leaves with mold on them. Mm-hmm. There's lots of animals that not just chimpanzees and. That we know that they even flake. They witness flaking stones. That chimpanzees are doing that. We are storytellers. We're the animals that tell stories. And if you were from another planet and you came here, you would say these are creatures that tell stories. We can't not tell a story. If you even say, "How you doing today?" and some you start telling someone, they go, "What's your point?" I mean, if you're not telling a little story, beginning, middle, and end. And that's what makes us human. And to be able to to use your voice, and we never even study it. You just, it's what happens to you, but that's what you don't even try to use it. But trained actors know that the voice, that's where all that information, the frequency of radio that you've got, the carrier frequency is your voice. Mm-hmm. And you modulate it to get the emotion. That's how you're going to get the heart of another human being.
Okay, and speaking of other human beings, we have one on the line. Oh. This would be Carolyn. Carolyn, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
There might be some argument from my siblings about that human being remark.
Oh,
Before I get to my question.
We'll just take that as a given for the purposes of this call.
Before I get to my question, you just mentioned something about the voice. I read that people can more easily discern a lie if they hear the person tell it as opposed to see them. And I guess that's because we're fooled by body language, et cetera. But yes, the voice does convey everything. And that's why I'm a little surprised when I was at the event last September, you didn't sound the least bit Southern. And I grew up in North Florida, 10 years ahead of you. And back in those days, of course, it was like Southern Georgia.
Yeah, it was. It I think it still is there, isn't it?
I don't know. I try to stay away from there. I was on the Greyhound the day after I graduated high school. So.
I hear you. I have to lose it. As an actor, I'm fascinated by other voices. So you come up here and you have a more crisper accent. I'm not talking about Alaskan accent necessarily, but I have to lose it 4 or 5 times a day, especially on the show, when I have to do Minnesotan or whatever. So I try to hold on to my Southern accent, but it's in there. But sometimes I sound almost Northern. When I go down South, they think I'm sound Northern.
I can get into it if I have to, but I'd rather not.
Yeah, there you go.
My mother was a teacher, so she didn't approve of that. And, I worked briefly in broadcasting. But, again, when you move away from the South, people think you haven't got one eye and a spoonful of brains if you sound like Southerner.
Yeah.
And your choice of words with describing that gentleman as having a National Geographic face, I think that's one I've never heard, and I think it's just it's so descriptive.
Well,
there's
a part that I love, and you can hear it in Southern writing. You can tell if a writer is from the South. And
oh, yeah.
When I've been edited by Northerners in some of my writing, they'll go, "Well, you don't need that word." Well, yeah, I do. Because that's not, it's got to hit the cadence there. There's a swing in it that I think makes it very musical and more, oh, how you doing, sugar? That, oh, kind of going up and down like that. That's in the Southern thing. And the way they sort of fake a graciousness by affecting the tone of women. Oh, wait, Southern, don't get me started on Southern women. Oh, my God. But
I hate to interrupt here, but we've got
to
take a break.
Let me get to my question before we run out of time. The question I have has to do with children. Do you find that they are interested? Are we going to lose it completely, or are the kids interested in storytelling? And now that it's an unusual occurrence, do they want to know more, and are they interested in carrying it on? That's my main question.
Well, we'd like to come back and answer that after this break. So, Carolyn, if you want to stay on the phone, you can. If you don't, that's fine, but we got to take a break now.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Okay, we're back at Hometown Alaska, and we've got Carolyn has a question. Carolyn, would you like to repeat that for our
guest?
Yes,
my question had to do with the interest of children in storytelling. I know they're fascinated by the sounds that you're able to make, but do they see a value in storytelling? Do you think it's going to be carried on?
You know what? There are so many different kinds of storytelling, and I think that just about every activity we do is storytelling. Yes, kids love storytelling. When you say, let me tell you a story, you can see the bodies relax as opposed to, and you can do that with a college class. You can say, I'm going to tell you a story. And they stop taking notes and just relax and listen. We can't not tell stories. Kids love storytelling. They're interested in sounds. They're interested in how you do that. No, I think there's even more interest we're getting back to going against, big television, big events. We're getting more acoustic now, and we have the ability to get acoustic and very intimate on the computer where the sound can be surround sound in my face on, like, Between the Lions. I shoot it 3 or 4 inches from the camera. Oh, no, about a foot from the camera. And I think the key is that we as adults allow the time and show them how to tell stories. Like, what did you do today? Stop and listen to what they say. And you can, it's like, well, who do you talk to? Okay, that's really important. But I find it never fails. You can stop a class with a story and have them make up stories. And, I find it will not go away. iPhones and everything else, it may become fragmented, but they still got to tell a story. Even your text is telling stories, you know.
Well, I thank you so much for coming back. As I mentioned to you last summer, they need to let you sing more because you have an excellent singing voice. High school choral teacher that I had, she was from Georgia, and she said two things that I remembered. One was sopranos, they pay to hear the high notes. And then she would say to some of us, or not me because my mother wouldn't let me have an accent, but she'd say, now, folks, I want you to sing the King's English. I don't want to hear any nice white eyes. So thank you again for coming. I'm looking forward to everything that you're doing here while you're in town.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I remember being in the elevator at Newsweek when I was there. First day, had my little ill-fitting suit, cheap suit on, and I said, would you mash 9? I said that on the elevator. And the whole, everyone turned and looked at me, and I went, just punch 9. And I went, oh, God, I've got to crispen this up. So because they shaved at least 20 points off my IQ right there in the elevator. So, yeah, there is a feeling you have to crispen it up if you're a Southerner.
So you cut away from them. You cut a glance away from them, I guess, at that point.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, I'd like to bring our next caller on. This is Louise. Sure. Louise, you have an observation or a question for our guest, Fred Newman?
Yes, I do. He just remarked that about 80% of communication, I think, so it comes through your ears and the emotional content comes through your voice. Mm-hmm. And I read a study where there were some girls who were shown to be much more comforted by the sound of their mother's voice when something upsetting had happened to them versus when their mother sent a comforting text message. And I'm wondering, you know, with the kids going more and more to texting, email, and other social media ways of communicating, how does he think that that's going to impact the face-to-face communication and voice contact? You know, what impact is that going to have?
Oh, thank you. That's a great question, and I wish that we knew. I think that we're getting into other kinds of storytelling that we've, you know, bold new areas we've never gone before. It is becoming fragmented. They have ways now, you know, with phones where you can send video and audio files very easily. But it doesn't have the convenience on the other end because you can read a text when you can and when you want to. I don't know. I don't know what that means. I do all the research about, you were mentioning earlier about heartbeats, and there's a really interesting research about two things come to mind. One is about courtesy and the way people bind as a community. It was done in Montclair, New Jersey, where they had people carrying books, and they would come down the street and they'd get a certain length of feet in front of you for someone approaching them, and the person would drop the books. And 9 out of 10 times, the people would help them pick them up. They had someone mowing grass on the lawn next door, and it dropped down to like 6 out of 10. The sound makes people pull back. And it doesn't address your maternal thing, but it does, the sound, we are affected all the time. How courteous you are, if there's a lot of loud sound, you're not going to be courteous. And people, kids, babies who grow up on the lower levels of buildings in New York City have ever so slightly lower IQs. After you round out for income and everything else, then babies on the higher story. And the explanations they posit is that there's too much sound too early. A mother's voice is exactly the frequency that a baby can hear. And that's why women all over the world, I don't care what language it is, they go, oh, look at it. Then the high tone, they do the little, my wife would drive me crazy. Yeah, look at, she even talks to the dog. They go, oh, come on. That's a maternal thing. They're going for the frequency that babies can hear. All these biological things we do, we don't even know. But they're very, very powerful and they affect the way we interact with others, including our family.
Yeah. Well, what I've heard is that the kids who use texting and other messaging like that become less able to read body language, and they become actually less empathetic.
I've seen my own kids, and I think that when they go through periods, I think there's kind of like they chew chewing gum as long as it has flavor, as long as the texting keeps giving them flavor. But I see them go in and out of it. And I'm not sure it's a permanent thing. I think there will be some kind of balance, but they go through ages like 12 or 13. It's like this intense social thing where the texting becomes, and it begins to trail off some. But I don't know. Good question.
Okay.
I'll look for more research on that.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. It was
thank you.
Very interesting. And I think that one thing that you're also missing from texting is there are visual cues that a person gives with their face, et cetera. It's not all just sound. And
that's true.
As you give your impressions of a dog or something like that, I see you sort of hunching up like a small dog when you're barking like a small dog, or waving your arms if you're a bird.
Yes.
And
yes.
Is that connected, or is it just
That's not the performer. No, it's because I pretend to be whatever I am.
Right.
If I'm doing a trumpet, I'm holding a trumpet. I have to do that for my own imagination. It helps me do it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other thing on the texting. That's why you use emoticons in email.
Exactly.
Because you need emotion there. One of the things that people will lie to you on the phone a lot easier than they do your face. And one of the reasons that some of the research is that the phone screens out the highs and lows. Mm-hmm. And there's all these little things that you hear face to face in addition to the face and the eyes are very telling. But that the highs and lows, the voice on the phone is really an ersatz voice. It's better. It's the best virtual reality we have other than, you know, iChat, where you're face-to-face with a video camera. But, yeah, all those psychoacoustic things are really interesting.
Well, I think that the whole field is rather more going on than we realized. And, in fact, I was looking up some stuff about sound effects, and I came across something that made me realize how complex and varied and sophisticated this area is. And that was, I was looking at a website for a sound effects company, and I went to their page on burps. There were actually 387 results there. And in fact, I think it'd be helpful for listeners if we could go through these a little bit and maybe you could explain to them what I was reading when I was 10.
I'm going to be 10 years old. Okay, I'm there. I'm there with you. All right.
Okay, well, we could have done passing gas as well, but I'm not sure we could say that on the radio, so we'll go with burps. This is the first one is described as a human burp. And this is a...
As opposed to alien or
we'll
dog
get,
burp?
We'll get to that later, yeah.
Okay.
This is a small belch. What would that be?
Well, wait. Okay, I had to do one little thing.
Okay.
I describe there are three kinds of belches. There's just the... that's the belch. Then there's it's the beer belch where you go, and then you go, and you blow it out the side because you don't want that coming up in your own face. So, I know what it was. It was out the side of your mouth. That's the beer. And then the beer and pizza one is the beer you go and blow away from you, so it goes the other way.
Very technical.
I do a fake burp. Just that would be, I would, okay, that's a human burp right there. I'll settle on that one.
So we've also got human burp, medium belch. And then human burp, large belch. Which is, they just say varieties on their website of that.
Now we're going to get into.
We're not going to ask you for your varieties. There's a
thing called a pre burp. That most people don't know, but it's why you pay me the big bucks.
Yep.
Because the sound effect person knows the pre-burp. Now, if you're going to do artificial throw-up, as we would, as everyone, every 10-year-old wants to be able to fake like a throw, and as a kid, it would be, you go, all right, that's a fake throw. That's not professional. What makes it professional is that you do a pre-burp. So you hear this. Now, that's what you get paid for. That's the money shot right there. Okay?
So then beyond that, we've got burp mail.
Okay.
Comical. This one is...
Burp mail. Oh, wait.
It's comical, but it's also called short and roomy.
And roomy?
Roomy, yes.
Oh, there was a cough in the background. Bruce coughed. So that was a roomy belch with cough.
Okay. Yes. And then we've got burp mail. This one says grow blat.
No.
Okay, so this is no problem. Yep. And then we've got...
Well, let's rip through these, shall we?
Okay.
No discussion, just go.
There's some more stuff here. Okay. We've got burp, throaty, wet, forced. Then we've got burp, small, wheezy, and snappy. And we'll just cut this short here and go to... We got English sheepdog.
English sheepdog burp?
That's what it says, yeah.
Oh, wow. Now that's awesome. There's someone came up with that. Okay, let's see.
There's a clue here. It says wine burp.
A Hawaiian tiny burp?
No, wine burp.
Wang?
Wine, like a dog whines. So that was probably.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I think.
And let's just finish up here with
we're getting a stomach growl, sorry.
Yeah, we'll skip the bearded collie, and we'll go straight to...
a bearded collie burp?
That's what it said in this.
Very specific.
Yes.
Very specific.
That's
I love that,
there's a sophisticated audience out there that knows the difference between a bearded collie and a English sheepdog, I guess.
There's a guy, that is not a bearded collie burp. I know. Come on.
That's right.
Come on. Bearded collie burp. Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. Okay. Depends on if they're eating dry food or Alpo.
That's right. They didn't specify on the website.
No,
which, of course. So then we've got Monster, Juicy, and Rumbling.
Let me see.
That's pretty convincing, I think.
That was my best one so far.
I'm tempted to flee the studio at this point. I'm afraid that the audience will catch me if I go out the door. And our last one is Monster, Fast, Gurgling, and Wet.
Monster, Fast, Gurgling, and Wet. Let's see.
Uh,
I'm not sure that was my best monster fast gurgling and wet.
Lovely.
But I don't know that we could have
only get one chance at a sound effect on a live radio show. That's it.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you have a sound effect that you've created that you're especially fond of or feel like is a classic or was like a really tough one to get and you nailed it?
Oh, wow. I shouldn't bring this up because about once every 3 or 4 years, my sinuses are clear enough. I can actually get out the sound of a piano. But no, I can't pull it. No, and I definitely don't have it today. I've got a little sinus stuff. I think the double whistle is my favorite. And it's in the book. There are like 200, let me promote my book, okay. 200 different kinds of sound effects and in categories. In the most difficult, and they're all rated by difficulty, this is the most difficult, is two whistles from the corners of your mouth. And
okay, folks, he's wetting his lips here before mm-hmm. he does this.
He's
tensed. He's on the edge of the board. He's cracking his knuckles.
Okay,
he's studying concentration, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. now he puts in.
Yeah, you started out with... I haven't got you. Now, that's two, but the key was behind the teacher's back to actually do... would you like It's Crying Time Again or Nutcracker Sweet?
Let's go with It's Crying Time Again.
Okay. I got the left one. One's off.
The judges gave me a 5 point at that time.
This is why I do public radio.
Yep.
Because I can get to do my double whistle, It's Crying Time Again, although pretty pathetically that time.
Well, you didn't stick the landing, but I think
it was... No, I didn't stick it. It was a little wobble on the nail.
Yeah, yeah. It's because you had to get your way through the forest on the way up here, probably.
It was that fast monster with garbling.
Yeah, the guy's outside the door there waiting for us to come out. That's that reminds me.
NPR. Must eat NPR.
No!
That's very good. Too rich. Too rich. I'm afraid.
Too rich. It's too rich.
Too rich. I think I'll eat again for like another year. So you're basically like a Foley man, is what you are. You're like a living Foley man. That's the guy in the movies that does the footsteps and stuff.
Yes, exactly right. But it's a very specific occupation, Foley. Mm-hmm. Although you're probably more right than I'm even giving you credit, because as a kid, we would turn down the sound of sports like football or baseball, mm-hmm. and we would do the sound of, you know, the sound of a quarterback, you know, and then we would do all the sound effects, my cousin Pete and I. I was doing so much live Foley that there was a time when either Pete or I, and I can't remember which one, we fell down, and we did the sound of someone as we honestly fell down on a flight, and we went, oh, and we did the sound effect of it. So I was a little more into sound than other kids, but I wasn't unique. They're all in that area. Kids did sound effects and Foley live stuff, you know, mm-hmm. like there was the person that, you know, the sound of ripping silk when the teacher would lean over to pick up something, have it ready, go, those were always good.
I'm not aware of anybody that would do this besides you live. Is it a very small convention when you have the live Foley Man's convention? Or is there people out there that are doing similar things to you, what you do in Prairie Companion?
Oh, you know, I don't know if there's any, there's only one job like that in the world that I know of. And there are some, isolated radio shows that'll be on and I'll be asked to do one. Other mm-hmm. people do it. There's somebody doing, out of Texas, a theater company that's doing a radio show of Intergalactic Nemesis. And they're doing this old, sci-fi kind of thing. And they're doing that. And they, mm-hmm. but... For a regular show, there's no old radio where there are bits. And Garrison really based that show on Grand Ole Opry. I didn't know this, but and then he realized if he's going to do Grand Ole Opry, he's got to do, you know, they were doing like Doan's little back pills and Carter's little liver pills. So they were doing all this stuff that he had to come up with fake commercials. And that's where we come in. And then they started doing radio dramas. But there, and so much of that is improvised, too, with Garrison. But there's only one job in the world that I know that's like that. I'm just darn lucky to be doing that, you know.
So what does it take as a person to have the faith to go out and say, I'm going to do something that nobody else does? And how do you How do you launch yourself in that direction?
I don't think you desire that. I don't think you know that it's possible. And I think, like I did, I feel like now that I'm pulling a scam, that the IRS is going to, you know, come back up, get him up against the wall. You know, that you can't do that legally and get paid for it. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing, I listened to the show and admired the show and admired Tom Keith doing the sound effects. And there was a lot. Tom Keith, who died in November, fantastic guy. And he did all the sound effects in St. Paul. And he decided not to travel back in around 2000. And Garrison asked me to go. Garrison on the machine. Hi, it's Garrison Keeler. Fred, would you... And my machine would cut him off because he spoke so quietly. Three times he called me, and he wouldn't leave his number. Garrison, leave your number! You know? But I started traveling with the show, did all the travel shows, and Tom Keith did St. Paul. But Tom was a really radio guy, had one foot in the old world. Not radio dramas, but he had a radio morning radio show in St. Paul for years and years and years. Jim Ed Poole, he played this character. And he did sound effects, but he used a lot of old radio devices and things. I came from these storytellers, so I feel like that, I'm not a real radio sound effects person. I just play one on the radio. Mm-hmm. That's what I feel like I am. I'm an imposter, but I do with those old sound effects guys. But Garrison does so much what those old storytellers did that it works with him. But it's very rare, and you have to understand that show is a piece of jazz from beginning to end. That Garrison is so good with words, he makes up stuff on the spot, and he can be funny and poetic and talk about, you know, very close to things, religion and things like that, and emotions that very few people do in a subtle way. And then he's very aware of sounds, so he can incorporate that. And so the improvisational nature of what I do, because I am dyslexic and I have very little working memory, it works with Garrison because I can just pivot on a, you know, it's a shark, you know, in an airplane with a chimpanzee on the wing, you know. He does that, and it's fun. It's just fun.
So you don't have an extensive script or anything before you go on? It's
like... No. We do for any of the set scripts with Sue and Tim, the actors on the mm-hmm. show. We, you know, Guy Noir, Cowboys, and those things. Those are scripts and Rhubarb. But when he and I go out and we just do things, let's do something with office supplies. And the next thing I know, I've got my tie caught in a Xerox machine. Somebody help me! So it can go, or there's a script and he just wings it. We both know if there's a script and we almost never rehearse it because we know it's better. We'll be funny. We won't try to repeat anything. We'll just do it as we go. He will make up stuff, and he's always throwing one more. It's no, not the yak. It's the gnu beside the yak, you know, yeah. And then I've got to go something else, you know, beside it. So he's always throwing stuff out. That's fun.
So it sort of depends, I guess, in some ways, on the audience not knowing what a gnu would sound like. You just sort of freelance it. You think a gnu is like got a long neck or something like that. So it's going to make a certain sound.
Well, there was a yes, you're right. And there was a joke that Tom Keith and Garrison did. He would say he would start naming off various ungulates. Is that the word ungulates? Ungulates.
A hoofed animals?
Hoofed animals.
Yeah,
yes.
Like a moose.
He would do, you know, yak. That he would name, and Tom would do the exact same sound effect for each one. He'd go, you know, caribou, deer. He would do. I tend to. It varies. And what's great about the audience is such a loyal audience. They'll give you credit even when. I mean, one time he had a string of animals, and then he said, and a lemur. And I'm thinking in my head. Like a three-toed sloth or something, and I pawed him with my hand. I never touched Garrison on the radio, but the audience went crazy because it's this string of stuff, and it suddenly stops, and I'm just pawing him with my fingers. It had made no sense at all. People at home are like dumbfounded. I have no idea what went on, but that's the way the guards were dealt that day. You know, they I think they know it's a piece of jazz, and they accept it.
I think when you're at home, you just say, I wasn't in the audience. Missed something. It was visual. That was crap.
Something I talk about. I'm doing a master class tonight, and one thing I find the different media have different energies. I come in with more of a television stage energy than the people on the show. Sue and Tim are brilliant actors, but Tim can be screaming, and nothing's happening on his face. Should have just hit my microphone as I gestured. That's what I do. I'm more that way. It took me a long time to understand the energy of radio. It's much more intimate, where you listen to, you think about Regis Philbin, Gelman, get over here. He's over here. He's shouting at you like this. The television, even like, when they're doing the news is like, today in Afghanistan, there was a, they're doing this kind of stentorian news that, you know, they do this sort of gravitas and so forth. But Garrison is sitting there with a whisper. And the taste of a tomato on a summer day. I can't do his voice, but he takes that time and he has that intimacy. He, psychoacoustically, your eardrum is an inch from his mouth, his lips. So he is closer than your lover. Your lover doesn't even whisper to you in bed that close, that he is that right there. And that's why I think the show works, because he can bring it down to this very intimate level. And so when you come down here, people lean in, they listen, and they'll really hear every single word. There's no other media that can actually, the visuals are going on too much, you've got to cut and got to, no, but he'll take that time and do that. And NPR does that. That's more like, someone mentioned storytelling. There's so many different kinds. There's a storytelling events. And then the fox turned and he clapped, you know, and the rhythmic. That, I don't like any of that. I like conversation. It's just me and you talking across a table. That's as far as it gets. It can be more intimate when you use a microphone. That's storytelling. And that's the stuff of life.
I would like to ask, we're running out of time here. We've got a few more minutes. But
sure.
Are there sounds in Alaska that you found that were unique or surprising?
I'm surprised they're not. I've heard that not a lot of frogs here. And is that right?
That is correct. There are like wood frogs, I think, is what we got. I mean, they don't make a lot of noise.
They don't.
And I'm not sure why that is. I mean, there are things like where there's dense forest, the animals tend to have lower voices. The accents of birds that are forest birds, they have... The owls, if you think, ooh, ooh, these things call because lower frequencies go through dense brush and travel fast. Higher birds are lost very quickly. They're more on the edges of forest, and they flit out into the fields and come back in for protection. You get things. I don't really know enough about the biology. I'm trying to think of Alaska. Anything surprised me? I'm always surprised by when you hear the sort of Sarah Palin accents. Mm-hmm. You know, it's much more extreme than Minnesota, and then you have there's a flatness in places too, where you have more of this kind of thing, you know, and you get that. I love all that. Oh, wait, is that the time to go?
That would be our cue.
That's a sound. I got to wind it up right there.
Can we talk about where Fred's going to be performing? Friday night, 7 o'clock at the Anchorage Museum Auditorium. And there's a lot more to Fred than what you're hearing today, because he is a very visual guy also, as I can attest. I mean, there's more than just the sound effects. There's the movement that he makes. And if any of you went to the fair last summer, you saw it. And we want everybody to come out and support Cyrano's Theater Company. We're having our 20th anniversary, as I mentioned, and to see Fred, because this is a really entertaining guy, and it's going to be a fun show. So it starts at 7 o'clock, and it helps us bring quality theater to Anchorage. We've been doing it for 20 years, and we want to continue to do that, and nonprofits always need their fundraisers.
Okay, thanks so much, Bruce and Fred, for coming in.
Oh, it was great.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.